Welcome, everyone. It's lovely to see you guys again. And we are privileged today to be joined by Richard Godfrey. And he's got masses of experience in digital transformation and change. And same as everybody else on this panel, I'm going to call it. So welcome, Richard. It's lovely to see you. Last week we sort of talked a bit about change, a bit about people, a bit about technology. And I think really the major focus is the people element, because without that you're not really going to make sure your processes are in place and your technology and whatever you're implementing is going to work right. So what do you think about that, Richard?
Yeah, I think people is probably one of the most underestimated elements of any transformation project, and it reminded me actually before we were talking, I was interviewed once after a conference, probably 5, 6, 7 years ago now, a long time ago. And someone said, what's the most difficult part of transformation? And I jokingly said something like, the sooner they build Skynet, the better. So I don't have to deal with people, because they are genuinely the hardest bit of any transformation. Going and finding the tech, putting the tech in, building tech, relatively straightforward, relatively simple. They don't answer back or they don't have opinions and tell you what they think about what you're doing. Whereas actually the people change can sometimes be 3 times as long as the technology project. And I find in a lot of cases, we're not putting the right resource in around the people change element to it. The focus has been too much on the digital, the tech, what are we going to do, how are we going to use it, rather than kind of the user adoption, the understanding what it's doing. We still know that things like AI still scare people a little bit, they're a bit unsure whether they want to use it or not. We need to actually take the time to sit with them, to show them what it's doing, to show how it's collating the data, how that's bringing it to an answer or deriving a solution from the problem, rather than just kind of skimming over that bit and assuming that a project is done once the technology is in and it's gone live.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I know Kim Adele's had a lot of experience, so has Nish, when it comes to this sort of thing. So, Kim, what do you think then about the sort of people element and how it can really mess up whatever projects that are being trying to be implemented?
I think one of the big challenges around the people piece is, as Richard said, it's often the one that people don't think about. And they don't put enough time and effort into it. So what we're asking people to do is carry on doing their day job whilst actually adopting a brand new way of working, with often very limited amount of support in how they do that. And they come at it with a level of fear. You know, people have got comfortable knowing what they know, and now they're going to move to not know what they know. That leads people to feel a little bit vulnerable, that their position might be at risk. Often with big transformations, it does result in some roles not being there. So people are a little bit uncertain. And very often, particularly in the organisations that I've been in, people have got change fatigue. They've been changing for that many years, for that many things, often that hasn't happened. I worked in one organisation that for 14 years had been implementing a system, 14 years, and they were still doing workarounds and bits and bobs, and it still wasn't there. But they expected the people to embrace the change. Well, after 14 years, people didn't think it was coming. It was like the emperor's new clothes. They were like, yeah, whatever. That system's not gonna happen, because it hadn't happened yet. One of the things I often do with people when you're first getting them there is say to them, do me a favor, just fold your arms for me, and get everyone to fold them, and then go, great, now unfold them and fold them the other way. And you watch their faces, and some people can do it, but they have to think about it. Some people are literally stumped and have to look down at their hands and go, right, and they can all get there. And it's like, the reason I do that is to say change is uncomfortable. It doesn't mean to say you can't do it, but it means it's not going to be comfortable. And that's okay. It's okay for it not to be comfortable, but that's when you share it with us rather than rally against it. You tell us where it's uncomfortable. You tell us where you don't understand. You tell us where the challenges are, and then we can help you. We can provide that support. And I guess that's where I made most of my career, was going in after they've done transformations that didn't transform and go and actually do the people part of it and say, well, that's great, you've got a shiny new box in the cupboard, but until people take it out and use it and feel comfortable with it, they'll all still be doing their own little workarounds that actually mean that you're not getting the efficiencies or the increased technology that you thought that you were paying for.
Yeah. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So what about you, Nish? What's your experience been with, I'm not going to say badly implemented change projects, because that's what you do. But, you know, with the people element and how to kind of encourage people to kind of get in line with the process and the transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for me, I've worked in sort of across different industries. So obviously relate to what Kim said, a huge amount with, for example, banking. But the other thing is where I've had this experience is when you had to automate a otherwise, you know, people process. So that concept of someone trying to get someone on board who thinks that you're about to replace their what they do in their day-to-day with a machine was an incredibly uncomfortable process. First of all, you have to make sure that you reassure them that actually all of their knowledge is not going to waste, and really speaking, the next year, 2 years, 3 years, their expertise isn't necessarily going to be replaced to the point where they're made redundant. Actually, they could be brought on board and be part of the development of the process or development of the technology. So that I've had a number of experiences in that in the fields that I've worked in, because a lot of it is hardware integration, and then through software integrations as well. It's all about, like we were talking about as well, Richard, taking those people who are at the top of the tree and making sure that that's all filtered down towards the end users, and really understanding what does that mean from an end user perspective. What are they going to be changing? Is it going to be moving from a spreadsheet input into a, you know, database input? Literally, does it mean that they will be clicking a different button on their PCs? Will they be looking at a different screen, going to a different workstation? And it's trying to map out what those physical changes would be, you know, in terms of what that person will be experiencing. And in terms of my day to day, that's literally some of the basic things that I've brought into what I look for when we're changing technology. It's very much asking those very, very basic questions on, like, hang on a minute, what is that? What does that mean that people are physically going to do? Because when I talk to end users, which I try and engage very, very early on with end users, that's the first thing that they ask me. So, you know, it's not about the end vision. It's not about, you know, in 5 years, we're going to have this amount of automation and everything's going to be quicker and faster. It's okay, well, what do I have to do when this goes live? What do I do the day that, you know, I put my bag down and I sit at my desk? What's the first thing I'm going to have to do tomorrow as opposed to what I'm doing today? And it's all about kind of making sure they're happy with that and engaging in those conversations that people just don't want to have. Technologists don't want to have them with end users. So it's all about sitting there and talking to people and saying, look, I know this isn't great. And listening, like you said, Kim, to their worries about it and saying, well, what do you think that actually means? It doesn't mean that much different because you do this in your day to day anyway. And I often use the example of switching phones. That's, you know, you're able to pick up an iPhone and we're able to kind of use that really easily. I know that you probably didn't like it when you had your Nokia, but you didn't think that you could use an iPhone either. So I often use day-to-day examples when I go through my processes as well, because it's using relatable scenarios that people can say, oh, actually, yeah, I actually embrace change daily, but it's trying to apply that now to their work life.
Wow. That's really insightful. Thanks, guys. So over to you again, Richard. So, you've obviously, from your experience, I've interviewed you before on Influential Visions, and so I know a bit about your background, right? And I know you've worked within governmental organisations to implement, like, smart cities. You've done that sort of stuff. So do you think that people have really struggled with change and the pace of change in the last 2 years, like since the COVID hit? Has that really kind of sort of pushed them to the point of despair? Or do you think that they've been kind of relaxed in the public sector more than private?
Yeah, I wouldn't say relaxed. I think it's given a sense of urgency to some elements of it. But as much as there's a lot of noise, I think, around the amount of digital work that went on during the pandemic and that, especially in local government where I understand what's going on, if you actually look at what happened, we implemented Teams, we implemented 365, we built some databases that we had to build to understand COVID numbers and where people could get help. What we haven't done is looked at the main services that a council provides and looked at the transformation of those. And there's still a huge amount of work to do in those areas. And I categorize things into kind of manage, improve, and reimagine. And manage is obviously your legacy estate that you've got. Improve, I normally call kind of legacy plus digital. And then reimagine is that blank piece of paper in front of you. What do we need to do? Within the pandemic, there was quite a lot of blank piece of paperwork because we didn't have systems to deal with COVID and we didn't have the information that could tell us that. But from a transformation perspective, the biggest shout I hear about is, oh, we use Teams. And again, you're sat there going, okay, but Teams isn't new. The technology has been around decades. I remember writing a business case for a video conferencing system back in 2014 to try and save council officers driving between different buildings to have meetings. And I worked out the cost of every meeting, how much it cost in mileage, time and effort. And the business case stood up beyond belief. But obviously it was a no-goer day one because they all wanted to come and meet in person because they couldn't possibly have those conversations via a video call or a conference call. And they wanted to meet in people. So I think more so the pandemic has started to open people's minds to the possibilities that what they thought was difficult or impossible before now could become possible. But I think in kind of central local government world, we're still in baby steps in the first elements of that. And kind of coming back to the point you made before, one of the things I do when I work with organisations is look at their strategy. And I wouldn't say 9 times out of 10, I'll go with 99 times out of 100. If you read a local government strategy, it's very generalized. It's always about four pillars or key themes or something. And we go in and we change it. I have a template that I use and you actually end up with about 100 different templates because you go in and talk to every single department. And it's not about high level buzzwords about cloud or what was the point? There's so many words, I can't even think of them, but it's a bit of a buzzword bingo that goes on with the strategies. But we look at it from, you're the housing department. Over the next 5 years, you want to achieve X. This is where you currently are today. How are we going to use technology to help you get from where you are today to where you want to be? And coming back to Nish's point, that's then when we're doing a technology project, the business case is quite straightforward because it says, In your own service plan, you're saying this is what you want to achieve. Here's a business case that says, I don't know, spending £20,000 or £50,000 on these tools is going to help you get to that position either within the timescale you want, or it's going to accelerate you on that journey to it. And therefore, the project is less about IT looking at shiny tools and what we want to do. It is very much that conversation between IT and the business to say, we're here to solve a problem for you. We want to work with you and you understand the problem we're trying to solve and why we're doing it. And therefore kind of the communication between the two becomes much more important. And that's where you can start to drive things forward at a quicker pace than you have done. And I think the last 2 years has probably started those conversations, those really important conversations between the business and IT to actually sit down and go, actually, how do we help you now make you better, give you better data, inform you better, help you interpret the data, use AI to take away some of those admin tasks that take you half your day up and things like that. So I think it's been an important thing to happen. I can't say it's important because it was a global pandemic, but within technology, it's been important to change people's mindsets to what they thought was difficult or impossible is now becoming a conversation at the top table that needs to be happening.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. And Kim, you look like you had something really important you were going to say, or you look really interested about like a couple of minutes ago. And I just wonder what was on your mind around this this conversation, to be honest.
No, both of you, Nish, too. Just really interested. So I haven't got anything really interesting to say. Just was really interested in what Richard was saying. And I think, I guess for me, one of the things that the pandemic possibly brought out was it did allow us to see the art of the possible, didn't it? It allowed us to think differently because all of a sudden our other options were taken away. So actually, we didn't have a choice to do nothing because that would mean we wouldn't be connected in any way whatsoever. So I think that was really helpful. I think one of the challenges it created was for all those leaders that weren't particularly good at engaging with their people and keeping them informed and keeping them engaged when they were face to face. They didn't get any better when we made it virtual. So I think we did see, unfortunately, for some of the people, a bit more of a disconnect, because actually if they were with a leader who wasn't so adept at that left them with a little bit of a void, didn't it? And I think that's where they started finding alternatives to say, how can I feel more connected? How can I get rid of some of these admin jobs that have got me sat at the edge of my bed for like 8 hours a day? And they really add no value now, whereas it might not have been as unappealing when you're doing those in an office and you're still chatting to people because you can chat whilst you're doing them. I think once you suddenly realise you are sat at home on your own with nobody else to talk to, you start to see how much of the role really isn't adding value but still needs doing. And I guess that's probably driven quite a shift in people's desire to actually embrace technology that's going to help them with some of that.
Wow. Thanks, Kim. That's great. So what about you, Nish? What's your sort of view on what Richard was saying with like local authorities and the way they were pushed into change?
I think what was really interesting is that conversation between the business and the actual IT providers. I've been in situations where I'm a third party supplier where I'm bringing a software in. I've been sort of in-house as well, just working across IT and business. And there's always an unexplained animosity between business and tech. It's always the technologists always believe, or the IT infrastructure people are always like, this is the way that we do it. And you guys have to change. And the business is like, hang on a minute. You guys are meant to help us, right? And there's that collaborative element that's completely that gets lost somehow in translation. And somehow, even when you've got a third party product, it's always somebody else's fault that it's not being done correctly, when actually the key here is to have those conversations and collaborate and really do sit there and say, look, we are just as a technology provider, as a technology service, department within the organization, we are looking to make sure that the business is working as efficiently as possible. And it is about putting those, not getting each other's backs up, stepping back and saying, right, what are we doing here? What is the actual end goal? And being really sort of simple and practical about what it is that you're doing and not trying to go too over and above, because people do get carried away with four pillars and strategies and things like that. And it's just literally sitting there saying, we are here to work together to make sure that you can push a button and get all the data that you want out quickly, so that eventually we can iterate on that and make it a bit more AI focused, or do all the take away admin tasks from a team that doesn't need to be doing it. And I think what you said, Kim, is really interesting as well, because we spoke about it in the last podcast as well. What is it that drives people to change? What things can we do to say, right, what makes a person say, right, tomorrow I will take this on? And it's all about those environmental changes. And so it's really interesting that you say, like, when you're sat in an office, yeah, you don't mind like shifting around bits of files, organizing a file share for 2 hours in a day because you fancy doing it and you can chat to your friend whilst you're doing it. Whereas at home, suddenly it's like, hang on a minute, how have I spent this much time doing this ridiculous task? And it is true that the pandemic has caused an incredible amount of technology change. I mean, more so than anyone. I mean, I never thought that my mum would be able to get on a Zoom. Flipping out, that's happened. Like, she's, she's all over it now. So, it is incredible. And all this, I really hope that organizations, I know there's been a huge amount of shift from working, like people are now, I've heard people are now being asked to go back into the office. And, they're full work from home days have gone from 2 days a week to 3 days a week to now 5 days. But I do hope that people are the heads of organizations who didn't embrace that change of remote working are trying to embrace it and trying to sit there and say, actually, people were more productive at some points at home. And yes, there's value in people coming into the office, but I do hope that some organizations will embrace that a little bit more. Lately, actually, since we've all kind of all the restrictions have been lifted, I have been seeing that people have been forced to go back into the office a bit more. So I'm hoping that, you know, things will update in that respect as well. People start realizing that, you know, you can, I'm finding personally that I can do more at home than in the office, for sure.
Thank you. You've all added massive insight. So Richard, what excites you the most then, do you think, about the next sort of year to 5 years in terms of like technology change and life?
Life in general. I think for me, it's going to be probably the realization of a lot of senior people who have ignored technology for a long, long time, that they suddenly need to get involved in it. And as I said before, we kind of started recording, there's a big difference between understanding how to code and how to write APIs and things like that, to actually looking at your business and going, okay, I want to achieve X over the next 5 years. How is technology going to play a role in that? And where do I think it fits, in order that I can then have a sensible conversation with someone who does understand the technology, and it not just be a battle of acronyms going back and forth across the table. I used to work with a guy many years ago who was far, far better than me technically at anything IT based. But whenever someone came into a meeting from a supplier or anything, he used to stop them and say, I'm really sorry, can you explain that to Richard? He won't understand what you're saying. And it was nothing to do with me not understanding. It was us working out whether they could explain it to me in layman's terms, what their system actually did, because we knew we at some point we're going to have to talk to the rest of the business and have those conversations. And if the sales guy is just sat there, again, using acronyms, terminology, doesn't necessarily understand almost what he's selling you, then it was a non-starter for us. And it really made a difference to how we kind of interacted with suppliers, but also then back into the business, because then we also knew how we communicated back to them. And I'll give you a really good example from Peterborough, is that one of the guys in the networks team, and hopefully he's not going to watch this because he might remember, wrote a little internal note that was going on our intranet to say that he wrote something like server PCC and then the name of the server will be unavailable on Sunday between 9 and 5. And I sort of said to him, well, what does that mean to anyone? He went, oh, they won't be able to access email. So why can't you just write email will be unavailable on Sunday? And it was almost like this, but I have to show people technically exactly what the right answer is and exactly what we're doing and why we're doing. And it's almost that no one cares. I always used to say this about cloud computing. No one outside of IT cares whether it's cloud or not. They care whether they can come in on a Monday morning, turn their computer on and everything work for them and it be quite efficient and easy to use, not what server it's sitting on or where it is in the world or anything like that. That's kind of the IT bit that we talk about, and we work out what's the best solution to give the best end result. And so there is a, hopefully over the next couple of years, there will be a bit of a change of people saying, actually, right, we know we had to do it during the pandemic and we were forced into making these changes, but now we're actually interested and we want to adopt some of these things and we want to work closer with IT. And it's not just IT have to understand the business better. The business also have to understand IT better and actually bring them together and have those conversations. And I think that's what will start driving businesses and councils and everyone else forwards at a quicker speed than they probably have over the last decade.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So how about you, Kim? What excites you about technology and life in the next year to 5 years?
Well, I guess we chatted about a lot of this last week, didn't we, on kind of what's exciting. But I think for me, it's about the human journey is the most interesting one, because actually we're going to have to go on a very big journey to better understand each other. Richard, to your point, you know, often it's like, well, the business needs to better understand IT, or IT needs to better understand the business, but actually we all need to better understand each other and find a common way forward. And I think one of the things that we've unfortunately lost is the art of listening to understand, not listening to interject. And so we listen just long enough to be able to make our point or underline it. And I think we've learned that we need to change that, because we can walk out of a room and both have totally different opinions of what was agreed and what we were doing in there because of the terminology that's been used, or the fear of, we've all got a fear of looking stupid, haven't we? Of like going, I don't really know what they're saying now, and they chuck in their acronyms, or they, you know, throw about something else. And I think we've got to get to that place where it's like, we're in it together. I think the pandemic gave us that. It gave us that we're all in it together. None of us knew. None of us had been through something like that before. So there was no superiority of knowledge. It was just a case of, actually, I know how I'm getting through it. How are you getting through it, Richard? How are you getting through it, Nish? How do we work together to help each other? Because we're in an unknown. And I think that's helped break down some of potentially those perceived barriers that there were before, that was like, that made it difficult for people to be able to articulate what it was that they were looking to do. And I think now that we're able to better articulate it, you know, I spent many years working in organizations that would tell me off about my lack of vocabulary, and I'd have to go and learn a new one so that I would be, you know, have more gravitas and fit in, until I realized that the only people that understood me were the other people in the boardroom, and the people that I led, well, they're going, I've got no idea what she's talking about, which wasn't very helpful, because, you know, I needed them to actually affect the change and to run the business. And I think we've kind of made that shift around. A lot of our conversations used to be about what was important to us. You know, I'd sit down with the R&D team and they'd be telling us what, you know, what was important to us. And I went, but does the customer care? You know, they got very excited once in an accounting software company that they'd got lock date. And I was like, And what's that do to the customer? Well, it means that when they lock it down, they can't mess it up again in the future. Mm-hmm. Do they care? No. Their accountant probably cares. Absolutely. The HMRC probably cares, but the customer is not going to see the value in that, because it's not solving anything for them. They're going to see the value in not having to spend an hour reworking something because there was a flaw in the system. But don't just give me lock date and expect me to be able to go and get millions of people to come and run in and buy it, because they're not going to see the importance of it. So I think, Richard, to your point, getting people to actually be more simplistic, you know, emails are going to be down. Great. It does exactly what it says on the tin. We all know what it means. Everybody feels included in that conversation, as opposed to when we put some of the conversations out, either because we talk too much in business speak, and the IT guys are going, I've got no idea what they're talking about, because they're in pillars, they've got steps, they've got, I mean, we all have a few strategy words, don't we, about our vision statement. And you're there going, what's that actually mean? What are you trying to do? And I think if we can create a common language as people, then we'll be able to really embrace the advancements that there are in technology, in AI, in digitalization. But I think if we don't, then they won't get implemented as well as we would like them to, because of the misunderstanding.
Thanks, Kim. So over to you, Nish. What excites you about technology in the next 5 years and life in general?
I think for me, Richard, what you just said about having people coming, where IT has to understand more about the business, but the business is actually more, and people understanding more about IT. I think that the pandemic, what it's done is moved all of us forward in terms of what we've decided to embrace. We've all picked up apps. We've all picked up like video conferencing, all of these sorts of things. I joke about my mum, but it's true. Like, you know, everybody has understood technology and how they would like to engage with technology way more in the last 2 years than we ever have before. And so to me, it's having a population of the business who are, and we've got an episode about this coming up, so millennials versus Gen Zs and all this sort of stuff, having those people within the business who are now just a couple of steps forward in what they like to, what, how they engage with their own personal devices, how they engage with things, how they've understood AI is used in their day-to-day lives. And therefore, as a technologist, it means that you've got a more educated base, right? You've got people who are like, actually, I prefer it when this happens rather than this, rather than it being IT driving the user experience, is users knowing what they'd like to experience and therefore, you know, driving that technology and the software to be updated as per their user experience. So it's that excites me, the idea that, you know, everybody's been a bit more educated, everyone's embraced, rightly or wrongly, in good and bad ways, but everyone knows a bit more about how they like to engage with technology. And I've found, certainly in the last, since I've been back at work and back at in front of people, people do know, oh, okay, if you mention something like, oh, you know, this is how it works on Netflix, or this is how it works on your Instagram feed or whatever it is, people are now applying that to how they use their workplace technologies as well. And I've seen, you know, things like, you know, different applications that I use for my work try and incorporate some of that in their just general user experience. You've got feeds, you've got things only popping up for things that you've followed, things like that are just, it's interesting how that's evolved as well. So everybody's becoming a bit more ingrained with technology based on their day-to-day experiences. So that's, I'm excited about that.
Well, thanks so much, everyone. I think that there are, you know, massive changes that are happening now in terms of like supply chain, you know, green energy investments. There are so many things that are going on in technology, especially because of this the issue over in Ukraine, awful situation over there, as well as COVID too, you know. And I think also, certainly in terms of old people and how they engage with technology, I mean, my mum and Zoom haven't really been getting on too well, right? So I think once these companies work out better ways to serve the older generation, I'm kind of excited about that as well. And certainly Kim lent me an Amazon Echo for my dad, and he's like 89 in July, right? So, and he loves his Amazon Echo. Like he literally just, you know, sets some reminders, and you can actually drop in on it and leave him a message, which I haven't tried yet because I thought it might freak him out, right? But, or he probably wouldn't hear it, you know. But I'm excited about the whole world really and changing for the better, you know, and having people having more time to do what they want to do instead of spending all this time on tasks that are meaningless is something that Kim and I talk about quite a bit. So, but guys, I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you again. And so, Richard, how do people find you if they want to find you?
How do they find me? I'm normally on the beach down in Brighton on a sunny day. That's how I spend my time with all the automations I've put in place. But yeah, I've got the company website, which is SynCity, www.syn-city.co.uk. I'm on LinkedIn just under Richard Godfrey. Twitter, I think I'm RJGodfrey18, although I don't use it a huge amount. And then I've got a new website, which is www.ditchpm.co.uk, which is a new tool I'm building to help local governments manage their projects in a more agile way, their digital projects. So trying to remove some of that heavy governance that they've had for years, and ensuring that the conversations are happening at the right time, decisions are recorded and everything else. So really there's a lot of opportunity, hopefully, to get local government moving forwards quicker than it has done before, with all of the governance and everything else that they still have to have on top.
Super. It would help if my mic wasn't muted, but there we go. Well, thanks so much, ladies. Really appreciate you too. And thanks to everyone for watching. Thanks very much for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen.